Thank you, everyone, for coming for my talk, almost the last session of the day and right after tea break. Historically, most of my talks are after lunchtime, so this is better because I literally have to shake people up and make them exercise and sort of wake them up. But I'm hoping the afternoon tea is going to sort of do that work, and all of you are excited to be here for this talk. So this talk is titled Introduction to ASP.NET 5. The code of the talk is M333, and my name is Pranav Rastogi, so just making sure that you're here for the right content, and in case you had sort of other talks you wanted to attend, this is the chance that you want to leave. So effectively what I'll be covering in this talk is, I'm going to sort of talk about ASP.NET 5, and just sort of before even I set the stage for the next 1 hour, so how many folks have used ASP.NET 5 here? Okay, very few. How many people have heard about ASP.NET 5? Okay, so about 70% have heard about it, and about 5% have used about it. So I'm gonna keep the level around 300. If you think that these are bouncers that nobody's understanding, then I can drop down the level. But if you think hey, these are just slides, which I have only 5 of them, then I can sort of change the level. So please do let me know and ask questions throughout the talk. So the talk is gonna be geared around a very high-level overview of why are we doing ASP.NET 5, what's happening with our existing assets in ASP.NET, like web forms, MVC, where are we heading, what sort of scenarios are we targeting ASP.NET 5, and I'm gonna show you very practical examples of how do you get started with an ASP.NET app. What are the basics of the ASP.NET app? A lot has changed in this version of ASP.NET, so I just want to make sure that you understand these basics, and I'm going to show you then a sort of a completed app on and what it looks like, and we have a small demo in the end where hopefully if the Mac gods work with us, then we'll probably have a demo on the Mac machine as well. So that's sort of the theme, and that's sort of the outline of the talk. Please do stop me and ask any questions. If my accent is not very clear, then I'll try to go a little slower as well. I can understand I'm a little harder to sort of understand for a longer time. So this is sort of the outline, a little bit about myself. I'm a program manager for the ASP.NET team, so part of my responsibilities are sort of handling ASP.NET, and within ASP.NET, I handle sort of the getting started experience of when you do file new project in VS. I also have ASP.NET Identity, which is the new membership system that was released in VS, I think 2015, actually 2013 as well, with the MVC5 and web forms. And I also sort of manage Azure Redis Cache, and I have a talk tomorrow on Redis Cache as well for folks who want to be interested in figuring out how to optimize their apps with a caching layer in the middle. This is my picture of, this is me hiking up. I'm from Seattle, so I was hiking up Mount Adams, and the funny thing about this picture is it was not snowing when I hiked, but when I uploaded to Google, Google ran some algos and decided it was snow around, so it had to snow. So yeah, this is Google being smart. Anyway, so it was a funny story. I've also co-authored a book on ASP.NET 4.5 in C# and VB as well. So, that's sort of where I'm coming from. I've been with this team. When I joined this team, we were shipping ListView control and Norton framework 3.5, so sort of seen the progression from 3.5 to ASP.NET 5 as well. I have very few slides, and these are sort of the first 5 slides that I have. So, when you think about ASP.NET 5, when we think about ASP.NET 5, one of the sort of couple of key fundamentals that we think about is it was a new open source web framework that we wanted to build that was more modern and was more suited for cloud-based workloads or workloads which are now becoming very interesting, where now folks are running their miniature sort of servers on devices which are smaller and smaller. So there are ASP.NET 5 running on Raspberry Pi, on nano servers, on Docker containers. So we wanted to target this sort of spread or spectrum of apps, scenarios, and servers where we want folks to be able to write ASP.NET apps and host them in these environments as well. So that was sort of the bigger motivation of why we wanted to start with a stack of ASP.NET 5. And we all love .NET, like we don't want folks to leave .NET as well, so we want to make .NET sexy again and sort of exciting again in our world. So that's sort of, you know, what ASP.NET 5 is. What ASP.NET 5 is not is sort of the following bullets, and this is a key message that we want to give forward is it's doesn't mean web forms is dead. With .NET Framework 4.6, we pushed out a bunch of updates to the existing stacks, which included support for HTTP2. So HTTP2 was a new standard by W3 community, which allows you to increase performance of your apps by multiplexing requests between a client and a server. So traditionally, let's say we're serving 5 images. For each image that gets served, there's a new TCP connection that gets created. And if you create 5 of them, it's expensive, takes more time. HTTP2 is a new protocol which lets you multiplex within a single TCP connection multiple images that can be served or multiple static files that can be served. So it's a new Windows 10 feature, it's a new IIS feature, and it's a new Framework 4.6 feature that you can use. There is support for Roslyn-based code dump compilers. So Roslyn is the .NET compiler as a platform which you can use to sort of compile code on the fly. And traditionally, we have code dump compilers which sit inside of ASP.NET, which are used to compile your ASPX pages, your code files in your app code folder. And so with the introduction of Roslyn, you can now use the new languages features for C# and VB in your ASPX files, like string interpolation or any of these. If you have sites which have lots of DLLs, so lots of code in app_code folder, then the Roslyn-based code dump compilers significantly improve performance of your site. And there are a few minor updates around async model binding, you know, updates to Entity Framework, updates to MVC5, Web API 2. So this entire stack sort of got this update along as well. It is not the VB killer. Like right now where we are in terms of ASP.NET 5 is the development languages that's supported right now is C#. But once we go out, there'll be VB support coming in as well. It's not compatible with the existing stack, and by that I mean conceptually it's different. So in the existing stack, you were used to the concept of there are like handlers and modules, there's the ASP.NET runtime that runs in the pipeline. In the ASP.NET 5 world, so these concepts are different. There's not a concept of a handler or a module, but there's a concept of a middleware. And so middleware is nothing but a component that runs in your pipeline. So you'll have to sort of understand these concepts, and which is what I'll cover in my talk, sort of to make it easier to understand ASP.NET 5. It's not, so from a philosophy and an implementation perspective, what we've been trying to target is, you know, we want to make sure that you can write ASP.NET apps in any platform that you like, and you can also run ASP.NET 5 apps in any platform that you like. So if you're a Windows developer, then you can use Windows and existing toolset that is there, like Visual Studio. If you like Macs, you can install ASP.NET 5 on a Mac machine. You can use Visual Studio Code, which is the new cross-plat editor, or you can use Vim if you want to, and then you can go to like Linux as well. You can install ASP.NET 5, and you can use your own editor that you have. So a lot more focus on ASP.NET 5 is around making sure that it seamlessly works cross-plat, and it's not optimized for VS. It's a command line experience first, and sort of we have tooling that builds on top of it. So you'll see, like, as I do very basic operations of creating a project and building a project, underlying the covers, like, we are still using the same command line, which is exposed to all the platforms that we have. And it's not done yet. Like, where we are sort of in our process of ASP.NET 5 is we are still in a beta stage. So when Visual Studio 2015 RTM shipped, the version of ASP.NET 5 that shipped was a beta 6 version. And since then, we've been trying to release a beta every month. So we released a beta 7 last month, and we are about to release a beta 7 very soon, sometime this week. And later in my deck, I have a roadmap slide which talks about, you know, when will we ship, when is the supported version going to go out. So it'll give you a good idea as to when can you start building and deploying apps in production. And so this slide sort of summarizes what are the key components that go into building these modern apps with ASP.NET 5. It's totally modern. So if you compare it with ASP.NET 4.6, you know, you had a .NET framework installer which used to install all these libraries on your machine and used to GAC them. And if you were creating scenarios that you were trying to optimize for high throughput, you would get all of the existing infrastructure in by default, even though you didn't want it. Everything in ASP.NET 5 is compromised to NuGet packages, like that extends to .NET framework as well. So .NET Core is a NuGet package. Any like system string is a NuGet package as well. So if you don't want it, you can exclude it. So you only pay the price for what you use in your applications. It's environment-based. So that means that, let's say you're running locally, then you can optimize your app for local environment settings. You're running in a production environment, then things like config can be optimized for production, or you're running in staging, then config can be optimized for staging, like connection strings and keys and around it. So that's like inbuilt into the platform. It's open source, everything is open source. All our issues are on GitHub, all our tracking for public releases is on GitHub as well. It's a faster dev cycle. So ASP.NET 5 now introduces a new project system, which is DNX-based, which stands for .NET Execution Environment. And the key difference between DNX-based projects versus traditional projects is traditional projects are MSBuild CSproj-based, where you have a CSproj files, which has a list of files that you have in your project. And there's a lot of friction gets involved when you start checking in, checking out these files in a team environment, these merge conflicts with CSproj files. When you want to make a change to a C# file, you have to build it, and then you go refresh the browser, and you see the changes. With ASP.NET 5 now, it takes care of all the things. There's a dynamic compilation, like on the fly, which is underneath the covers using Roslyn, so you can make a change in the C# file, save it, refresh the browser, and you're done. There is no concept of a CSproj file, which you use to keep the list of files. You choose your own editors based on what you like. There'll be an optimized experience with the Visual Studio, but you can use ASP.NET 5 with anything that you prefer. And it's cross-plat, like, and that goes down the stack to the .NET framework itself. Like, you can run .NET Core on Windows, Mac, and Linux as well. And the last one, which should be fairly obvious, is it's super fast than before. And again, it's a work in progress where we are sort of benchmarking ASP.NET 5 against the industry standards. So there's a standard called Tech Empower, and these guys sort of run micro benchmarks on very small workloads and how much, for example, throughput can you get with a server which returns hello world and stuff. So we are trying to sort of make sure our stack is performant so it compares well with other platforms like Node, Scala, or something else. This slide talks about sort of, you know, if you think about a 10,000 feet picture on how does layering happen and how should I think about web forms, how does it fit with ASP.NET 5? So at the bottom of the stack are the sort of the .NET frameworks that we know about. On the left side is .NET Framework 4.6, which is what we know of today. On top of .NET Framework 4.6 sits ASP.NET 4.6, which is System Web, and on top of it sits the app frameworks where you can use MVC, 5, Web API 2, SignalR 2, EF6, or web forms. And this works as it works today, and it'll continue to evolve. We'll continue to make changes. On the right side is sort of the slightly, there's a newer stuff that's coming up. There is .NET Core 5, which is the cross-plat .NET framework, which again is modularized and sort of optimized for this cloud-based workload or the workload where you want to run on nano servers or Raspberry Pi or different devices itself. And there is a new execution environment which is called DNX, or .NET Execution Environment, which pretty much is what we call the runtime for ASP.NET 5 and basically loads ASP.NET 5 into a hosting environment. And then sits ASP.NET 5, which is what is comprised of lots of middlewares, packages, like web components that you can add into your application. And on the top sits the programming or the web framework, which is MVC 6. Now, MVC 6 is a unified framework which includes MVC, Web API, and Web Pages. Like earlier in the ASP.NET 4.6 world, these used to be three different frameworks. And even between MVC and Web API, things used to be different. Like routing was different, DI was different, model binding was different. It was very hard for developers to sort of mix and match the two frameworks together. So in ASP.NET 5, now we have a single unified framework called MVC 6, which includes MVC, Web API, and Web Pages. And it'll include, we'll also add SignalR, EF7 and stuff. And then a key difference is ASP.NET 4.6 apps can only be run on .NET Framework 4.6, which is Windows only. ASP.NET 5 apps can be run both on .NET Framework 4.6 and .NET Core 5. So that's the key distinction that I wanted to make. So if you want to do cross-plat, ASP.NET 5 is the way to go because it will run both on .NET Framework 4.6 and .NET Core 5, which will allow us to run on Windows, Mac, and Linux. But if you're targeting sort of Windows and the existing .NET framework, then you have the same sort of feature set that we have. Any questions on this slide? Does the messaging make sense, or is there any question on web forms and where does it work? Yes. The question is, if I have an app running on 4.6 and I want to port it to 5, like, is it going to break or not? It'll break. Like, you'll have to make changes. Yes, so, and the way we sort of are messaging it is, like, let's say if you had an MVC 5 app, which was written for .NET Framework 4.6. As long as you've not done customizations to your app, it should just directly port. Like, the controllers are just going to port because controllers are the same. Now, if you start defining your own sort of routing engine or your own formatters, then those will have to change because the underlying infrastructure that they were built on is changing. So you need to adjust for those changes. But if you are staying as much as possible in the app frameworks and using the defaults for the most part, it should be an easier port to do. But yes, the more customizations you do, the harder it's going to get to port apps to ASP.NET 5. Any more questions? All right. So this is just a slide. You know, I'll let you refer it afterwards. It's open sourcing of .NET. In case you didn't know that, like, the whole .NET framework is open source. So the whole .NET core, again, is being built in the open as well on GitHub. All issue tracking is over there. ASP.NET 5 is also open source. It's available on GitHub. You can install VS 2015 RTM, and I had this slide saying beta 7 is coming soon, and I made this slide while I was in Seattle, and we were supposed to release on Wednesday Seattle time, which is now Thursday Auckland time, so it'll be out hopefully tomorrow. So these installers basically allow you to they give you the new runtime for beta 7. They also give you the new tooling bits for runtime as well. So new templates and any of the new ASP.NET tooling. Right, so that's pretty much it for the slide deck. I'm gonna switch over to demos. Right. So what I have installed on my machine is VS 2015 RTM. I'm running beta 7, but I'm running sort of nightly bits of beta 7, which are 3 days old. So bear with me if anything crashes. It won't happen in the final product. So I'm going to create a new web application. And if you notice that now we have two categories of ASP.NET templates. We have ASP.NET 4.5, which is the existing templates that we have, and these match the framework version that you select, and you can create web forms, MVC 5, Web API 2. And then we have ASP.NET 5, which is in a preview state, so you can create empty Web API and web. So let's create an empty application. Awesome. Let's try again. I did give out the disclaimer. All right, so let's try to restart VS. Right.
Core,
So the question was, MVC5 runs on 4.4.6. What do I have to do to make sure MVC runs on ASP.NET 5 or .NET Core? So there's a new version of MVC that runs on ASP.NET 5 and .NET Core, which is called MVC6. So it's mentioned here, like. So this, what this diagram is saying that, so there's a new stack for MVC6. It uses ASP.NET 5. ASP.NET 5 is loaded by DNX, and DNX can run on .NET 4.6 or ASP.NET or .NET Core. And if you want to do cross-plat, then you have to pick .NET Core. Is that clear? Perfect. All right, let's try again. An empty app. Keep our fingers crossed. Hopefully. Looks like it's progressing. Yay. All right. So this is the hello world of ASP.NET 5. And I'm just going to walk you through the project structure, introduce you the concepts of DNX, and I'm going to show you very simple examples of how do you sort of serve static pages in this app. So at the heart of the DNX project system is this file called project.json. And the presence of this file makes it a DNX project. And it has sort of these following categories. There's a section called webroot, which is what's your folder name where you want to store all your static files. So the model has changed a little bit where earlier you used to have your HTML pages spread across your app. But what we are recommending going forward is all your static files go in a folder called webroot. And this is what you publish to your server, and this is what clients see, basically, is what your public-facing assets. All your source code remains in a different folder. We have the dependencies section, which is basically what are all the packages that are installed in my application. In this, I have two packages involved, an IIS-based server, which can be used to serve this app in IIS Express, and a web listener, which is used to self-host this app. So I can self-host this app locally on my box as well. There's a commands section, which is basically saying what are all the commands I can run. And you can think of commands basically as we have these global tools that you can install, like a secret manager or a self-hosting tool, and you can run these commands as part of your application. So running an EF migration is a command. Installing secrets into your application is a command. Then we have frameworks, which is signifying what frameworks do I want to build this app for. So remember, DNX can run on both 4.6 and .NET Core 5. So this, the presence of both frameworks means that this app can target both frameworks. And the reason you might want to do that is, let's say you start building your app today, and you realize not all features are there in .NET Core. You can still target both of them, and as features light up, you can start deprecating DNX 4.5.1 as a target framework and truly go cross-plat. Publish exclude is when you publish to the server what are the set of folders that you want to exclude. And exclude basically means that in this project, what are the folders I do not want to include at build time. So remember, this model is different from csproj files, where you used to have csproj that used to track all the files in your project. Now this model is, I'm going to track everything except the ones that you exclude in this section. So that's sort of at a very high level project JSON. Then we have this startup class, and you can think of this as being the global ASX for your application. And this is the entry point where DNX is going to load ASP.NET 5 into your app. It has two sections, configure services, where you can now add services that you can use in your application. So things like logging, or you had a timer service. And the entire system is DI-based, so that's where you configure your DI container here. And then we have this configure where you configure your ASP.NET 5 pipeline. And so remember, this is a modular world where everything is local to your app. There's nothing that exists on the server. And this, in this app, I just have two packages, a self-host package and an IIS hosting package. And I'm running, the request is gonna come in, and I'm gonna just sort of return the response in this application. So if I do Control F5, so you'll see basically hello world over here. right? So nothing too crazy, but let's start to see the difference. So I'm going to throw an exception here, and I'm going to show you what it means. to be a modularized scenario. So I'm going to throw this application. And this is, I'm running on IS Express, so I get a web server exception in this case. So I'm going to switch this app to be self-hosted. And to do that, what I'm going to do is, since I have in my project.json a command called web, in my dropdown here where I can launch apps, you would see that I have two commands now, IS Express and web. So I can select the web command and do Control F5. And I have to browse to my port. And the reason I know, and the place where I know my port is the command takes in a file called hosting.ini, which is present in my application. And this is where I'm specifying what's the port that I want to use and what's the hosting layer I want to use in my app. So I'm going to go localhost 5000. And in this case, I don't get any error page. And the reason I don't get any error page is because now I'm self-hosting. And in a self-hosted world, there's nothing that gets loaded up from IIS, or I don't get the IIS benefits. So if I have to include, if I have to handle this error page, I now need to include an error page middleware in my application. So I'm going to do app.use error page. And if you notice now, there's a little light bulb that pops up. And so what's happening over here, let's see. So I'm going to expand this bulb. And what's happening is basically I'm trying to use this API. This API exists in a package which is not installed in my project. But the DNX project system and the VS tooling knows that this package contains this API. So it's prompting me to install this package. So I'm just going to go control dot and enter. And you will see that the references node is now getting expanded. And if I expand, you will see that the diagnostics package got installed as part of this workflow. And it got installed for both target frameworks, so 4.5 and 5.0 as well. So let's save it. Let's run this app again. And then let's refresh. So now I get my error page, basically. So this is the modularized app that we are going to use and sort of build, where nothing is installed or nothing is turned on by default. And as you bring in components, the ones that you need is when things will sort of start to work. Right, so let's look at another example of sort of DI. And so DI is inherently baked into the whole stack as well, right from the sort of the DNX layer to the app layer as well. So there are a set of services that the DNX layer injects into my application. And these are services around what's my server configuration, what's my logging configuration, and services that come from the host. And so in my configure method, I can just do I sort of logger factory. Include this using. And now I have the logger service injected into my pipeline. I can add more providers. So these are basically sinks where the log information should go. And again, I'm going to do add console, and I'm going to do control dot to install the logging package which has the console provider. Since nothing is turned on by default, as you start using these APIs, you will start to bring in more packages. And then I'm going to sort of create a logger. And this logger name is basically just a semantic categorization of where should your logs go. And I can do log information. It's like from log. Let's run this. And so you see this logging information from log being spitted out to the console. There is another logger source that I can add into my project, which is factory.add debug. So this extension method, you know, I'm going to add the debug logger. And in this case, now if I do F5, where it'll start my app in debug mode, I can go to the output window, and I can see the same log entry that I wrote. So now you can basically have the same experience where any logging information can get piped back to VS output, and then you get the same experience over here as well. So let's say now you wanted to add static files. And again, so you can also go and say manage NuGet packages. And you can search for packages here as well. So static files. And then you can install packages which will add it to Project JSON as well. So you know, if I install it, say accept. So this package will get installed here. You can already see static files being referenced here. And then if you go to Project JSON, you will see static files got added, basically. So you can install packages in any way that you want, and then you can start bringing in. I'm just going to remove this package for now, and I'm going to go back to my startup. Okay, and I'm going to show you how can you use configuration as well. And so I'm going to add a new file. Let's go to server side and say config, right? And so the config system by itself is not tied to any particular file format. It's a provider-based model that you can choose what you want. By default, we happen to pick JSON, but there's an XML provider as well. And there's any provider, and you can write your own provider as well. So I'm going to put some config entry. So let's say message, hello from config. And then I can go back to my startup, and I'm going to write some code to read the config value. So we have a constructor. So I'm going to use the config APIs. There is a config builder. Oops. So config builder now takes in configuration. Let's see what's wrong with this. Let me make sure my app compiles. Oops. Something bad happened. Oh, I know why. So I was in a beta 6 project. Sorry, I was in a beta 7 project with nightly builds. The static files that I installed was of beta 6. And there's a conflict, and that's why it's not working. So I'm just going to create a new empty project. Right, so let's create a new file. And then let's add a message. Hello from config. Let's drop down to our startup. And so we'll just define a constructor for startup where we config equals new configuration builder. And so configuration builder now basically takes in a configuration source, which is what's my application-based path. And since the entire stack is sort of DI friendly, I can pass in iApplication environment, which is coming from DNX. And this has the application-based path. So these are how services are injected into the application. And I can add a JSON provider for config. And again, I don't have this package, so I'm just going to do control dot and install it. And I'm going to do config.json. And I'm going to build the configuration. And so I'm going to say configuration equals this. Right. So this is how I can read values from a config. And I can drop down, add my own logger factory. create a logger. So factory dot at console. I mean, the control dot feature is actually fairly useful. So I'm gonna create logger, like just run dot log info. And I'm gonna read my value from this configuration that I just added. So message. And then I'm just gonna run it on the web command, so control F5. So you see hello from config, basically. So that's how you can read from config and use it in your application as well. So I'm gonna just drop down to command line as well, and I'm gonna browse to this project that I created, web application 56, source web application 56. Please let me know if you cannot see this console clearly. And I'm gonna show you how you can sort of run these apps from command line as well. And so there's a command called dnvm, which stands for .NET Version Manager. It's a tool that basically is used to install DNX. And it's a command line tool. You can run it on Macs and Linux as well. If I do dnvm list, it lists out all the versions of DNX that are active. So these are all the frameworks that are installed on my machine, and I can choose which one I want to run. So this is a true side-by-side where it's app local, and you can choose what app targets. In this case, the app is targeting the blue highlighted line, which is 1 or beta 7, but I can switch to any version of the framework that I want to target. And there's a command called DNX, which is the .NET execution, which is used to run this application. So I can do dnx dot dnx space web, which is gonna basically run the web command. In this case, I'm self-hosting. So in VS, when I did launch using the web command, it was basically running dnx web itself. So that's the whole message around where this stack is now sort of CLI first, and then VS tooling is built on top of it with the goal that you can now run the CLI on cross-plat and then use your own editors to sort of manage these apps. So I'm going to create a new project here, which is basically a web application which has MVC controllers, which has auth, which uses Entity Framework. So you'll get an idea as to what does this app look like. And you know, you can compare it to how this app would have looked like with MVC 5 to get a feel of what does migration mean for such scenarios. Right. So this app is created. Let's look at the project JSON first. Right. So again, it looks very similar. I have webroot. I have dependencies, which are all the packages that are installed. I have a commands section. So I have EF as well, because I'm using EF, and I can run EF migrations. I'm targeting both framework 4.5.1 and .NET Core. In my startup, now, which is where things start to get a bit interesting, is at a very high level, and I'll come back to it, is I have some code which reads config. I have configure services where I'm configuring all the services for my app. In this case, I'm saying I'm gonna use EF, I wanna use identity, I want to use MVC. I'm adding these two services for sending emails and sending SMS. And configure is where I'm configuring my request pipeline for ASP.NET 5. So I've added the logger. I am also adding selectively some middlewares based on what environment I'm running in. So this check on line 96, environment is development. So let's say I'm running in dev mode. I want to add more error pages. I want to add browser link. But in production mode, I don't want to add them because A, they have a penalty hit, and B, I don't want to expose all my error messages to outside users. So environment is sort of built in into the framework where now you can selectively add and remove components. And then I'm using MVC as well, so where I can configure the routes basically for my application. And my home controller, you know, this is what my home controller looks. Again, it derives from a base class controller, and I have same controller actions. I can return an action result. I can put some data in the view data, and I can view it on the page. So if I launch this application, I can click home, about, contact. So I can browse around these pages. So the controllers kind of look very similar to what they did before as well. I mean, I'm going to dock the two windows here. So let's go to about page. And then I'm going to change this message in the about page that I have. So let's say New Zealand rocks. I'm going to save it. I'm going to go to the browser. I'm going to just refresh the page. And you'll see that this message gets updated. So I didn't have to compile my entire app. I just had to change one C# file, go to browser, refresh. And the reason it sort of works is because underneath the covers, it's sort of dynamic compilation, in-memory compilation happening using Roslyn. You're not sort of producing any DLLs or storing DLLs on disk. And right now, it's a little slow, but like when we RTM, this is going to be pretty fast as well. Right, so I'm going to be using this app basically to talk to you about a few more concepts of ASP.NET 5 and sort of MVC 6, Web API. So when you looked at it, this is the MVC controller, and this is what it looks like. I'm going to add a Web API controller in the same app, and I'm going to start showing you this. What does a merged framework mean? And so I can right-click, and I can say add new item, Web API controller class. I'm just going to add it. And again, so this values controller, again, derives from controller. So instead of deriving from API controller, there's now a single controller base class, which you can use to serve views, or you can use to serve like your make your REST endpoint and return like strings or whatever. And let me go back to the browser. And if I do API/values, let me launch it again. API/values, and I should get the JSON result back here, values 1 and 2. So I can go back to my app. And so if you notice that the Web API controller was using attribute-based routing, I can go back to my MVC controller, and let's say for my about action, I can also use attribute-based routing. Let's call it my about. Go back to my app. Let's go to my about. And this should sort of take me to the about page as well. So if I go back, you know, I'm mixing and matching concepts. Everything works the same. It's the same pipeline that runs, the same formatter, it's the same base class, it's the same route definition that you have, it's same model binding. So everything is same. It's truly a single unified framework. In fact, things like, you know, DI also work the same way. So here in my API controller, so remember, in my earlier example, I showed you how the DNX injects a logging service to my application. I can use the same logging service in my controllers as well. So I can take in an iLogger factory. And this is my Web API controller. I can create a logger here. I can say API, and then inside my get method, I can say logger.loginfo. Oops, sorry, I didn't create the property for it. API controller. So use the web command. Launch it, go to localhost 5000, API values, and you'll see info API controller. Now I can basically take the same code. I mean,
and inject it in my MVC controller as well. So this becomes home. And in my index view, I can basically now say underscore logger dot log info MVC action. And then control F5. Let's go to localhost 5000. Right, so it says MVC action. So this is really just one framework. Again, so TI works the same way, and I can inject what I want into my controllers as well. Any questions? Sorry, I can't see you guys. Oh, yeah, there's a question. Yes. So the question is, in my default constructor, I injected a logger service. Like, who's handling that? So we pretty much have inbuilt a poor man's DI container, which we use to add services, and then components can pull in services from there. You can plug in your own containers as well. So if you want to use Artifact, Ninject, or anything else, you can register your services through those containers as well. Yes. So there are two kinds of services that you can inject. And so if you go to startup, logging is a service which gets injected by the DNX to the container. An example of a service that you can inject in your own application is this auth message sender, which is defined in my application here. So this is a service that I'm injecting in my startup code, right? And in my accounts controller, you will see that I am sort of in my constructor getting these services. So this is how you can add your own services to our container and then get it in your controllers as well. So in my startup, I briefly showed you this sort of code around configuring parts of your app to be run in development mode, in production mode. So let me show you how it works, basically. So when you install sort of DNX, so by default, the environment is production. And when we create these apps for you, we set an environment variable to development. So if I right-click in properties, we now have a new properties page which lets you manage different assets about a DNX-based project. So this application node is showing you what's my namespace, what's the DNX version I want to target. So remember, you can have multiple versions of DNX and the frameworks running. So which one should you use? What's the location of my web root? The build step has two parts to it. The produce outputs on build basically builds you a NuGet package that you can push to a NuGet server, and then you can install. And then debug is where all of the other settings are on what's the profile that you want to have between IS Express or web. And if you select IS Express, if you notice, we have this ASP.NET underscore ENV environment variable, which is set to development by default in a VS install. And when you deploy it on production, it's production. And based on what environments you are running in, you can set this environment appropriately. Right. So let's change this. let's see how this environment setting is used in our app. The two places where it's used in our application is in startup, where now I have this environment is development. The other place where this is used is in my views. We now have a new feature called tag helpers, which takes advantage of this. So historically, what you've seen in MVC is you've always had this HTML helpers, like at HTML.for, at HTML, which sort of makes you go a direction where you're mixing C# with HTML. Tag helpers is a new feature in Razor as part of ASP.NET 5, which basically adds more semantics to HTML tags. So for example, now I have this environment tag helper, which looks at this ASP.NET underscore ENV environment setting, and then I can selectively load scripts from the CDN if I'm running from production environment, or if I'm running locally, I can load scripts from my local path. I can also have staging and prod environment variables inside my application. So this is how you can use environment. The other place where you can use tag helpers are like, you know, let's say if you wanna have controller action, you wanna add more semantics to an anchor tag. So when you click the anchor tag, what controller and what action should you go to? And you can also see it in action. Let's say if you're model binding to a view model, then inside your labels, you can now use these strongly typed objects as well. So if I do control space, I get IntelliSense for email, any of the properties on that type. So this is, again, so tag helper, which, and you can write your own tag helpers as well. There is a getting started item template, which sort of allows you to create your own item templates or create your own tag helpers as well. So it's server side, you know, raise a tag helper. And basically, you get to inspect the DOM for that particular section, and you can manipulate that DOM however you want to see fit. Or you can write global tag helpers, which can change the behavior of these HTML tags globally, like the anchor tags that we have done. Right. I'm sorry? So does that refactor properly? What does that mean? Not currently. So it doesn't get reflected through the views. I mean, it gets reflected through all the C# files, but that work is sort of not done yet. All right. So let's check on time. It's 5:25. Are you guys going to stick around for 10 more minutes? Right. Right.
So are you going to give me that button on Visual Studio that allows me to go from, if I want to, ASPS to this now?
So the question is the concern around how do I migrate from a web forms application to ASP.NET 5? Okay. So the first one is harder. Because again, there is no magic switch that we can invent that can take all your web forms pages, convert them to MVC, and make sure they run on ASP.NET 5. So for that one, you really have to take the jump from going from web forms to MVC. And you don't have to. You're perfectly fine staying with web forms as it is. If you have new investments, for example, if cross-plat is really something that you want to do, like you want to deploy apps running on non-Windows machine, you want to develop apps on non-Windows machine, you want to run apps on Raspberry Pi, you want to run apps on Nano Server, then I would suggest start fresh building those applications. Don't try to port everything because it won't work. Not all of the features of the full .NET framework are there in .NET Core 5, so it'll never work. Right. I'm sorry, what? What does that mean? Here, let me show you this demo. I think it'll answer your question. So I'm on a Mac machine right now, and I'm going to just navigate to a folder, try 5. And so what I've done on this box is I have followed these docs, which are public, and I've installed DNVM, and I've installed DNX. So if I do DNVM list, so these are the two versions of DNVM I've installed. I'm using beta 6. I've also gone ahead and I've installed Yeoman generators. So this is an acquisition experience on how you get ASP.NET templates cross-plat. So with VS, there's a tooling that you get. Now, on a Mac machine, there is no VS tooling that could install all these templates. So we have these Yeoman generators, which we've created, actually, which is the community-based project and is owned by the community. And I can do Yo ASP.NET, because that's cool. And I can create from one of the following options. I can create an empty console or a web app. I'm going to create a web app. And I'm going to sort of navigate to that folder. And I'm going to do a DNU restore. So again, in VS, each time you create a project, it kicks off DNU restore, which installs all the packages, which is what I'm doing from the command line. I'm going to do DNU build. So each time you do build in VS, it does DNU build, which is, again, the same experience. And I can do dnx.space run, which is the same as dnx.web. But in this case, instead of running web, I'm going to run Kestrel, because Kestrel is a server that is cross-plat that you can run to, you can use to run your applications. And again, I can go to the browser, and I can say localhost 5000. And again, I have the same app running, right? But this is not it. I can say Control C, so I can kill the console. I've also gone ahead and installed Visual Studio Code. Now, for those of you who don't know what VS Code is, so Visual Studio Code is a cross-plat VS editor. It doesn't come with the entire set of features that VS has, but it comes with this very lightweight, minimalist stack of features that you might use as a web developer. And the entire idea behind VS Code is to help you make sure that you can build all these modern apps cross-plat if you choose to use VS Code. So I've already installed VS Code in my machine, so I'm going to do code dot, which is going to start VS Code, and this is it. So this is Project JSON. It looks very similar to what we had. I have Kestrel instead of self-hosting as the server I'm using. I still have the Kestrel command. I have hosting.ini where my port is. And I can now go to home controller. So I'm going to change this string message to be like date time. I'm getting IntelliSense dot to string. I can save this file, and I can launch this Kestrel command by pressing Command Shift P, Kestrel, which is going to start the Kestrel server. I'm going to go back to my browser, refresh, hit the about page, and just keep refreshing. So I just use Visual Studio Code on a Mac machine, which has IntelliSense. And you know, debugging is going to come in to this version as well. But the idea behind like VS Code is to sort of give you some sort of an experience which is lightweight. You don't want the entire VS features necessarily in this experience. You might in some cases, and in those cases, you would say install VS Pro or Ultimate. But for the majority of the cases, I think this is the experience that you know might work. So that's your answer. Yes. So how does ASP.NET framework integrate with existing frameworks like Spring and Hibernate? I think Spring are two different stacks, but Hibernate is something that you can use within ASP.NET 5. So the key message over there is as long as these Hibernate or you know other stacks can target .NET Core, then you can use them inside an ASP.NET 5 application if you want to do cross-plat. Okay. So, right. No. There is no config transform. So, and so since folks are leaving, I'm going to quickly show you sort of the roadmap. This is what we have. It's public on this GitHub location. Beta 7 is going to go out any day. The next target release is Beta 8, a month from now. RC is November, which is a go live and a production ready release. So you really should be targeting RC if you want to sort of be serious and start building apps. And Q1 of next year is sort of RTM. I do have these compulsory slides that I have to sort of go through. You know, if you have any feedback, do please fill out the session evals. It helps us to sort of structure these talks better. And I hope you had a good time and sort of you learned about ASP.NET 5, at least an overview, and you have enough information to get started. If you have any questions, I'm just sort of going to be around here for the 10, 15 minutes, and I'm going to head off to the hub. But thank you so much for sticking around on a late evening today.